The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, it gives me great, great pleasure to welcome Dermot Gavin to the bookshelf. This week, last week, Fíochna O'Brien was with me. He put Shadowplay by Joseph O'Connor up there. Dermot, good to see you.
Great to see you.
So what book is going up on the bookshelf?
I think Silas Marner.
Oh, right. Okay, tell me about this.
It's a book that I studied for the Leaving Cert, which isn't my reason for recommending it. But it was a book, you know, in those...
You have such fond memories of the Leaving Cert.
No, I don't. God, I hate it all. I hated my time in school. I was in a very good school, but I didn't enjoy my time there.
Right.
And on the curriculum, on the English curriculum, was this novel by George Eliot called Silas Marner. And it struck me at the time as being an interesting story. But years later, it ended up having much more resonance with me. Silas was this weaver in a town in probably the north of England. He was a religious guy. He worked very, very hard. He lives kind of on his own, but he was part of a community. And he ends up getting cancelled by the local community because he's accused of theft.
Okay.
And this is absolutely devastating for him because all his certainties are just gone. And you can imagine in a village, if you don't travel, if you don't go beyond the final outpost in that village, to be cancelled in such an area leaves you really isolated. What he decides to do is just work really hard and become a bit of a miser. So dedicates his complete life to earning money. And in the form of gold, and every night counting the gold through the embers of the fire and seeing how much he'd earned that day and weeks and after months and then after years it was good. And then all of a sudden his gold is stolen by the son of the ne'er-do-well son of the local lord. Okay, so the gold is stolen and Silas is absolutely devastated because number one, he's been cancelled. Number two, everything he believes in now, money, just gone. So utterly devastated and in a very bad way. And then one evening, he's been working away on his loom. The door of the cottage is open. It's a very cold night though. And he wakes up from a slumber in his seat and he sees what he thinks is his gold glinting by the fire. But it's not his gold at all. It's a little child who's crawled in from the snowy weather outside. And she is wearing a red cloak and she's taken... Now, when I'm talking about a little child, I'm talking about a baby child.
Okay.
She's taken up residence by the fire. And he wakes and he thinks it's his gold and he can't believe it. But instead, you know, he comes to and realises, no, this is a baby. This is a child. And the baby's mom has been killed. The baby's dad turns out to be the lord of the son of the lord of the manor.
An illegitimate child, as they would have used to say that anymore.
Illegitimate child. Now, him having a reputation for being an old miser, everybody was saying, right, give the baby here, give the baby here. And Silas decides to adopt the child.
Okay.
And he names the child Epi, which means all my delight is in thee, because this is, and the child becomes his redemption. And they go on to form the best relationship. I remember at one stage, Epi asking Silas to build a garden, to build a stone wall outside the cottage and plant a garden for her. And that really struck me when I went into gardening. But then when we discovered that we were going to have a baby many, many years later, my wife rang me and I was digging a garden at the Chelsea Flower Show. And she was telling me about this book that she was reading, that somebody advised her that she should read. And she says, I know the name of, we knew it was a girl we were having. I know the name of our little girl. And she started telling me, I said, I know the novel. I've done this in school. And indeed, we ended up having our...
Is that Epi?
Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
With the same kind of mad, the golden hair. Yeah. I don't know what colour. She's now 19 and she doesn't have, God knows what colour her hair is today. But so for all those reasons that this child became the redemption, as indeed maybe our child became my redemption in many ways and we moved back to Ireland from London. So that would be the novel that I would put.
That's a lovely story and a lovely reason to to put it on the bookshelf. So when you read it in school, it obviously didn't resonate the same way, did it?
It resonated because I loved English. I loved English and art, and I was not good at anything else.
Yeah.
It did, but and the fact that it stayed with me, you know, yeah. I knew the story. So when Justine was reading me, telling me about this, I knew her already, you know, so it was still there. So I had taken some joy and some understanding of this idea of redemption.
And have you gone back to read it since? Did you go back and read it after school?
Yeah. Once Epi was born, and you know, especially we had this extraordinary time where she was about 1.5, and we were in Seoul in North Korea, and everywhere we went, there was about 20 women in Seoul, and then in Japan running after her because I'd never seen a little blonde mop running around like that. So I read it around that time to remind myself of that kind of central scene in it, in the embers of the fire.
Oh, that is really nice now. I like that story. Has Epi read the story? Do you know?
I would say probably not, because Epi would be dismissive of everything that mum and dad might say.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, she'd grow out of that.
She will.
You hope eventually. So listen, that's a great addition to the Hired Shoulder bookshelf. Silas Marner by George Eliot. Pride of Place up there. What the full title? Silas Marner, The Weaver of Ravelo?
That's Ravelo? It.
There you are. I didn't realise that full title. What have you read most recently? What book?
The one that I've read most recently is probably James O'Brien. James O'Brien is an LBC journalist. Yeah. Actually amazing. And it's called How They Broke Britain.
Oh,
and
yes.
It's post-Brexit, looking back at what happened and who happened. So whether it's Rupert Murdoch, whether it's Nigel Farage, whether it's Boris Johnson, whether it's Liz Truss, everything that they did, charting it in great detail over 10 chapters. And it's kind of visceral in terms. I was born in London, and when I was about a month old, came home to Ireland. When I was about late 20s, I moved back over for 10 years for work. And I'm still working there. There this week, we'll be there next week. And to see what's been happening in the more recent times is really quite extraordinary. I would have been over initially during Things Can Only Get Better. I remember Blair was, and indeed I recorded party political broadcasts for the Labour Party around that time. So I was groomed by them and was a supporter. But to see the Conservatives, David Cameron and all come back, David Cameron, one of the mild ones, Theresa May, one of the mild ones, to see what's happened and to see what's happening on the street, the contrast with here.
Well, I was going to ask, so you know, sometimes it's hard for us to tell, those of us who aren't over and back maybe as much as you, whether politics is kind of an aberration, it's not reflective of the street, it's just reflective of kind of the chaos of Westminster, or whether there is real kind of division
Division in society, and society in ways, just the normal things that people take for granted, like having a library at the end of the road or whatever, they're gone. They're just, in many cases, they're gone. Parts of the place. I was a speaker on a cruise ship that went around Ireland. So we had 100 kind of well-off individuals coming for 11 days, stopping off every day in a different town, different city. They couldn't get over, first of all, how clean Ireland was. And it, as I said, these were Mr. and Mrs. Tunbridge Wells, very well-to-do. And they were quite shocked at maybe something we don't see, and it's certainly not everywhere, but the prosperity here, the fact that things seem to work here. Now, maybe we don't agree with that, and we have plenty of problems, but in comparison to parts of Britain.
And do you get a sense even, and maybe this is unfair because they're only in power for such a short period of time, of any change or being on the cusp of change now that the government has changed? Or have they just inherited such a mess it'll be years before you can tell anything?
Well, I think it's, you know, like the States, it's a divided place.
Yeah.
And people have opinions. You have a very small number of Conservative supporters who choose who the leader is. I think it's a poison chalice at the moment. But the Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves, they're going for growth to build.